Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
Another major story tonight is the passing of George Harrison.
He was a spiritual rock of the Beatles. He kept them grounded.
To me, he's just my little baby brother.
The former Beatle died in Los Angeles.
George Harrison was one of the biggest musical names of the 20th century. As lead guitarist in the Beatles, he enjoyed a level of fame and fortune rock stars today only dream of.
Along came these four mop tops. It just took everybody by storm.
Great voices. Great musicians. The songs were all immediate classics.
They're just exciting. It's like seeing a James Dean film live.
Their music defined the sound of the 60s and sparked the phenomena Beatlemania.
Why do they scream?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
It started just with a few kids screaming, and this noise was constant.
Even after the band split up, Harrison pushed boundaries, enjoying a successful solo career.
He wanted to experiment with different musical styles.
If you took away all the other instruments and you just heard him with the guitar, it was just like, whoa.
But along with a rock and roll lifestyle came problems with alcohol and cocaine.
I would call Patty and I'd go, "How's George? Is his hand in the coke bag?"
There was a frailty in him as a human being. He took everything to the extreme.
In later years, the quiet Beatle increasingly shunned celebrity and retreated from public life.
George was caught between two worlds in a way. He didn't love fame.
Amid much secrecy, on November 29th, 2001, George Harrison died from lung cancer.
George Harrison had accessed the best medical treatment in the world and allegedly had been given the all clear months before his death. So did something go wrong? I want to investigate his life and examine the factors that could account for the untimely death and mysterious last days of this most private celebrity.
Dr. Michael Hunter is an acclaimed forensic pathologist. He's the chief medical examiner in one of America's biggest cities, where he works closely with law enforcement and other forensic specialists to investigate suspicious or untimely deaths.
George appeared to be a very private person. So I'm going to use biographical and medical information to get behind this privacy. Understand what caused his cancer at a relatively young age of 58, and discover what other factors, if any, were involved in his death.
July 2000, Friar Park, Oxfordshire, England. 16 months before his death, George Harrison is at home in his personal recording studio, working on the reissue of one of his most successful solo albums, All Things Must Pass. It's been 13 years since his last successful studio release. The former Beatle is hoping to release a remastered version in time for its 30th anniversary, 4 months from now.
I can see that the type of cancer George died of was lung cancer. Early warning signs are a persistent cough, coughing up blood, tiredness, and weight loss. The fact that he's well enough to record a new album indicates to me that in this period, he was still feeling relatively healthy and was probably unaware of the tumor growing in his lungs.
George Harrison was the youngest of four children, born on February 25th, 1943, in Liverpool, to bus driver Harold and his shop assistant wife, Louise.
He opened his big brown eyes and long curled eyelashes, and I thought, that's the most wonderful baby I've ever seen.
George's childhood was spent playing on the bomb sites of depressed post-war Merseyside.
Tony Bromwell, friend.
We were kids together. We grew up in the same sort of neighbourhood in Liverpool. After the war, it was a dump. There was nothing.
Growing up, George was soon looking further afield for entertainment. And he found it in American rock and roll.
Apparently, a couple of days after Elvis had been on TV, he said, "Hey, Mum, I think that's the kind of job I could do."
His mother scraped and saved, and at the age of 13, George had his first guitar.
Mark Shapiro, biographer.
George, as a player, was quite natural, quite instinctive, and a quick learner.
Yeah, by the time he was early teens, he was pretty good at it.
On his daily bus journey to school, a shared love of music sparked a friendship with fellow pupil Paul McCartney.
The early relationship between Paul and George was that they were like older brother, younger brother.
When Paul teamed up with another local lad, John Lennon, and formed a band, George tagged along.
Wherever they went, George always brought his guitar. On the off chance that he would get called up, he was prepared.
George's guitar playing skills gained him acceptance. In 1960, when George was just 17, that band became the Beatles.
They're just exciting. It was like seeing a James Dean film live. They were amazing.
The success of the Beatles was a simple formula. They were presentable, young, clean-cut kids, great voices, great musicians. The songs were all immediate classics.
George personally wrote over 28 Beatles tracks, including Taxman, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and the enduringly optimistic Here Comes the Sun. By the time the Beatles split up in 1970, they had become the most influential band in the rock era.
I mean, these were struggling musicians who had just hit the mother lode. Everything they touched turned to gold and platinum.
George's success continued as a solo artist. His number one hit, My Sweet Lord, won him numerous awards and sold over 5 million copies worldwide.
I can see that George's childhood in post-war Britain was a poor one, and childhood illness was commonplace. And looking through biographical accounts, it appears George was quite a sickly child.
Growing up, George had regular bouts of tonsillitis. He had reached a point where he could almost count on having tonsillitis at least once or twice a year.
Tonsillitis is an inflammation of the tonsils, and I can see that at the age of 12, infection spread to his kidneys, and he spent 6 weeks in Alderhay Hospital suffering from nephritis, an inflammation of the kidneys. He recovered from this, but I can see that his throat would go on to be an Achilles heel for George for much of his life.
George famously suffered a severe bout of tonsillitis in 1964 when the Beatles arrived at Kennedy Airport for their first American tour.
When he got there, his temperature was 104, and the doctor came up and examined him, and he said, "I think I need to send him to the hospital."
Booked to go on the Ed Sullivan Show, Harrison was told to rest his voice and avoid talking.
Said to him to save your voice, don't talk any more than you have to.
His silence was noticed by the press.
And so that's where he got the name of being the quiet one.
Despite George having his tonsils removed in 1969, I can see he still suffered from bouts of throat infections such as laryngitis. Repeated bouts of infections can be linked to serious autoimmune disorders where your immune system mistakes parts of your body as foreign and attacks them. There is some evidence that links autoimmune disorders and cancers, but I can see no further evidence that George had one of these. So I'm discarding repeated throat infections and autoimmune disorders as playing any role in his death.
March 2001, Mayo Clinic, Minnesota. 8 months before his death. With his second wife, Olivia, George Harrison is attending an appointment for the results of a routine medical checkup. It's here that the news of his lung cancer is revealed for the first time.
Lung cancer accounts for 1 in 4 of all cancer deaths. Each year, more people die of lung cancer than from colon, breast, and prostate cancers combined. From George's death certificate, I can see he had non-small cell lung cancer. But crucially, if caught early enough, it can be treated, and it has a 5-year survival rate of around 50%.
Chris O'Dell, friend.
When I first heard, I believed that he would know how to deal with it, but I also believed he'd get over it. I just didn't see it taking him.
Smoking is responsible for 80% of the lung cancers diagnosed in the United States. And I can see from anecdotal accounts and photographs that George smoked heavily from an early age.
It's a big cigarette for a big man.
I remember back when I saw these pictures, more often than not, that he either had a cigarette in his hand or one in his mouth.
There's no doubt in my mind that nicotine was an addiction for him.
Tobacco smoke is made up of thousands of chemicals, including at least 70 known to cause cancer. When people smoke, their DNA is damaged by chemicals like benzene and polonium-210. Other chemicals like chromium then make these poisons stick more strongly to DNA, while arsenic and nickel interfere with pathways for repairing any damage, making it even more likely cells will turn cancerous. But I can see smoking cigarettes wasn't his only vice.
It was during a promotional trip to Hamburg in 1962 that a young, impressionable George Harrison had his eyes opened to a different world.
It was an escape from the black and white dullness of Liverpool. And it was naughty. I mean, the things that went on, you just would not believe it.
So let's be honest about it. They were playing places where that were populated by pimps, prostitutes, drunken sailors.
After returning from Hamburg, it is alleged that a new worldly wise George tried marijuana for the first time.
Everyone in Liverpool smoked some weed, but it was always something that was done discreetly and out of the way, not sort of, hey, I'm smoking weed, man. It wasn't like Bob Marley.
Like cigarettes, marijuana would become a regular feature in George's life.
Smoking marijuana is thought to be a contributing factor in contracting cancer. It is possible that when marijuana and tobacco are smoked together, more cancer-causing toxins are released than from tobacco alone, although currently there's no definitive research suggesting smoking marijuana by itself causes cancer. Smoking is clearly a factor in developing the cancer that would kill him, but more than 75% of lung cancers are diagnosed in people in their 70s. Harrison was just 58. Looking through biographical accounts of George's life, I can see he went through a highly destructive period in the 1970s, which resulted in him taking stronger drugs. I want to know what the trigger was for this and investigate the impact it had on his health.
The 60s were a softer time. It was the 70s when things got harder.
Tonight, there are only 2 surviving members of the Beatles.
On November 29th, 2001, the world woke up to the news that legendary Beatle George Harrison had died after a short battle with lung cancer at the age of just 58.
The former Beatle died in Los Angeles, his family by his side.
Now, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is re-examining the case to find out how George developed the disease and how he died so quickly from a potentially treatable form of it.
So far, I've discovered that Harrison was a heavy smoker, one of the biggest causes of lung cancer. But smokers normally develop the disease in their 70s. So I believe there could be other factors to his death. And I can see from biographical accounts that the 1970s were a troubling decade for George.
In 1970, George Harrison and his wife, Patty Boyd, bought Friar Park, the ultimate rock star retreat.
The house is magnificent. It's a Gothic mansion.
Having met George while working at Apple Records, Chris O'Dell was invited to move in.
He said, "It's so big. Would you like to come out?" While living at Friar Park, George and Patty became like a brother and sister to me.
After the breakup of the Beatles, Friar Park became a sanctuary for an increasingly reclusive George.
He didn't like going out to dinners, and he didn't like going to parties. And when they moved into Friar Park, that was pretty isolated.
It also became the ideal place to work on his first solo album, All Things Must Pass.
When the album came out, it was the best thing that had happened to him. Probably better than even the Beatles being successful.
The number one album meant that by 1973, and still just 30 years old, Harrison appeared to enjoy an unparalleled level of success. But behind the scenes, the pressure of going it alone with a solo career was taking its toll. He began using cocaine heavily.
I think the cocaine thing was because of the dissatisfaction with his private life.
George's marriage was falling apart due to infidelity on both sides. And despite his successful debut solo album, subsequent releases weren't as well received.
There was like two albums, three albums in a row that, you know, were respectable. Just the magic wasn't there. And George started to sense that.
I'd lived with them, so I knew the basic routine at the house. I would call Patty and I'd go, "How's George? Is his hand in the Coke bag?" And by that, I could tell where he was at and what she was going through.
In late 1973, with George's life at Friar Park increasingly revolving around drugs, Patty moved out.
I think it messed with his head. I mean, there's no polite way around it. I think he became a different animal when he was doing a lot of cocaine.
Cocaine works by sending high levels of the chemical messenger dopamine into the parts of the brain that control pleasure. But along with intense energy and alertness come crashing mood swings, anger, and recklessness.
But George's cocaine binges were at odds with his interest in the Hare Krishna religion, which had developed since trips to India.
He was a complex human being. I mean, he liked the drugs, but he also liked the chanting and the spirituality.
It was during this period that George made the decision to do an ambitious 45-day tour of North America. It began in November 1974.
George going out on the road on his own with a star band was a recipe for disaster.
Focusing on his love of Indian music rather than Beatles classics, George was out of touch with what the audiences wanted.
Harrison was so caught up in the whole spiritual aspect of what he was into that he would sermonize and admonish the audience for not responding respectfully. He didn't want to be the former Beatle. He wanted to be the current George Harrison.
The response from fans and critics alike was brutal.
People were booing. People were walking out.
If there was a disappointment, career-wise, that may have been the big one.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
I think one of the things that George Harrison may have underestimated was what it felt like to be a one-man band, right? So up until that point, the responsibility was shared out. The support was there. When he goes off on his own, all this pressure's on his shoulders.
For Harrison, it was devastating. Doubting his talent and creativity, he took refuge in yet more cocaine.
Reviewing footage from some of the concerts, I can see how the drug affected Harrison. He looks haggard, and it sounds like his voice has been badly affected. Cocaine that isn't absorbed by the nose combines with mucus and drips down the back of the throat onto the vocal cords, which swell and become prone to injury. The voice becomes hoarse and higher notes harder to reach.
After the disastrous experience, George never toured again.
At the end of the 74 tour, it seemed like he was over. I mean, mentally, he was just wasted. The negativity on top of the negativity, he was just burned out.
As far as cocaine being a factor in the development of cancer, the research is still inconclusive. There have been some studies that have found a link between cocaine use and the development of certain forms of cancer, such as non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But nothing conclusive yet links cocaine and lung cancer. George claimed he'd been clean for over a decade before his diagnosis, so I'm going to discount this as having any impact on his death.
March 2001, Mayo Clinic, Minnesota. George Harrison is admitted to the hospital for an operation. He will be undergoing a 4-hour lobectomy to remove a cancerous growth from one of his lungs.
The lungs have 5 lobes, 3 in the right lung and 2 in the left, and usually the entire affected lobe is removed. If the lobectomy is done successfully at an early stage, it offers a chance of long-term survival without recurrence of the cancer. But looking back through the accounts of George's life, I can see this wasn't the first time his lungs had been operated on. Just 15 months earlier, he'd been hospitalized following a traumatic incident at his own home.
By the late 90s, Harrison had been happily married to second wife Olivia for over 20 years and was living a clean and reclusive life. But on December 30th, 1999, an incident at their Oxfordshire home would shatter their peaceful existence.
Hello, please.
In the middle of the night, what would turn out to be a crazed fan broke into the house and attacked George with a knife and stabbed him. Olivia got up.
Stop! Stop! Get up! Get up!
Grabbed a poker and basically saved George's life.
George was taken to the Royal Berkshire Hospital in Reading.
Detectives hope to begin questioning the man sometime this evening. Meanwhile, George Harrison is expected to remain in hospital for a further 48 hours.
George received multiple stab wounds to the body and arms, but 2 in the chest had the potential to cause serious damage. The chest cavity contains the heart and is full of major blood vessels. Had the stab wounds punctured one, he could have bled to death in minutes. George luckily escaped with just a collapsed lung. But there is evidence that cancer can arise from injured and scarred lung tissue. So there's a possibility that the scarring from the knife attack was a factor in the development of the disease.
George!
But did the effects of the frenzied knife attack play an even bigger role in his death?
Have you ever heard that story that Napoleon used the Egyptian Sphinx for target practice and shot its nose off? Or maybe you've heard that a French astrologer named Nostradamus correctly predicted nearly 500 years of human history. Or maybe someone told you that the legendary blues guitarist Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil at a crossroads in Mississippi. These stories are what I like to call historical myths. Great little tales that may or may not have any basis in historical fact. On Our Fake History, we explore these historical myths and try to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story, it simply must be told. If you dig stories about death-obsessed emperors, lost civilizations, desperate sieges, voodoo, black magic, and famous historical figures you thought you knew, then Our Fake History might just be your new favorite podcast. Still not sure? Then stick around to the end of the episode today to hear a teaser episode of Our Fake History. If you dig it, then subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Music fans gently weep today. Former Beatle George Harrison has died after a battle with cancer.
Musical legend George Harrison died on November 29, 2001, after a short battle with lung cancer. But he was relatively young, and the type of cancer he had was thought to be curable. Now, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is looking into the case to find out why he died.
So far in my investigation, I've found that George was a prolific smoker, which would have undoubtedly been a trigger for the cancer. I've also found that a scar to his lung following a knife attack might have created an environment in which the tumor could have grown.
But it wasn't just the physical scars of the attack. For a recluse like George, it also took its toll mentally.
I remember talking to Olivia about it. It was very disillusioning for him. You know, we'd already lost John to a nutcase, so I knew that this was going to make him more paranoid than ever.
George would have felt very hyper-aware and very anxious. You anticipate the worst happening. So you're never really in the present. You're just, you know, waiting for something awful that's inevitable.
So did the stress from the attack play a role in his death?
Research has shown that people who experience intense and long-term stress can have digestive problems, fertility problems, urinary problems, and a weakened immune system. But as yet, there is little evidence linking stress to the development of cancer.
April 2001, Mayo Clinic, Minnesota. 2 weeks after his operation to remove a cancerous growth from one of his lungs, George Harrison's lawyers report he is making an excellent recovery.
The lawyer's statement is the only information I have to go on. But the fact that they claim he's recovering well, coupled with the fact that up to 70% of lobectomies are successful, makes me ask the question, why was he dead just 7 months later?
May 2001, Institute of Oncology Research, Switzerland. 6 months before his death. Following his lung operation in America, George Harrison makes repeated trips to Switzerland for follow-up treatment at one of the world's leading cancer research and treatment centers.
The details about these visits are slim, but follow-up treatment to a surgical procedure usually entails bouts of radiation or chemotherapy to try to ensure all traces of the cancer are destroyed.
Famously reclusive, George has chosen to finish his treatment here in secret after being spotted coming out of the clinic in America.
The fact that the press got wind of the whole cancer thing pissed him off. He understood the price he paid for being who he was. But it still doesn't stop you from saying, hey, I got a possible life-threatening disease here, and you're plastering it all over the newspaper.
May 2001. But while undergoing therapy, there is a troubling development. Not only has the operation failed to remove all the cancerous growth from the lung, it has now also spread to the brain.
The place where cancer starts in the body is called the primary cancer. If cancer cells spread to another part of the body, the new area of cancer is called a secondary cancer or a metastasis. In metastasis, cancerous cells break away from the primary cancer, traveling through the blood or lymphatic system to form new metastatic tumors in other parts of the body. It would seem in George's case, the lung would be the primary cancer and the brain cancer would be secondary. However, looking deeper into George's medical history, I can see lung cancer might not actually be the primary cancer.
July 1997, Friar Park, Oxfordshire, England. 2.5 years before his lung cancer diagnosis. While gardening in the extensive grounds of his mansion, George Harrison discovers a lump on his neck. After tests, it was found to be cancerous. One month later, Harrison undergoes a neck dissection, where several lymph nodes suspected of containing cancer are removed.
George's medical reports state that he had head and neck cancer. It's the collective name for all cancers in this part of the body, including the oral cavity, pharynx, the voice box called the larynx, the sinuses, and the salivary glands.
A spokesman for the hospital commented that the procedure was routine and that George was fine and back at home recovering. George was declared cancer-free.
George!
But press rumors broke, suggesting he was dangerously ill.
How are you feeling, George?
At the gates of Friar Park, he made an effort to limit the press hysteria.
Got cancer purely from smoking.
I see that in some interviews, George refers to his condition as throat cancer. But technically, that doesn't exist. It's more likely he meant laryngeal cancer. Crucially, patients who have had this cancer have an increased risk of subsequently developing lung cancer. So if I consider the possibility that laryngeal cancer could have been George's primary cancer, and that lung cancer was secondary cancer, I need to broaden my investigation into what could have caused it. Smoking was undeniably a factor in his neck cancer, but another big factor in cancers of this type is alcohol. And I've discovered clear evidence that at times in his life, George was a big drinker.
What I believe that alcohol may have done and helped him with is that he was a little bit more insecure, a little bit shyer, and that it gave him what it gives to a lot of us. It gave him a more confidence.
After the downturn in his solo career, during the mid-1970s, alcohol became a problem.
It played havoc with him physically and emotionally. I think at some point his health kind of bottomed out. I mean, if he got any worse than he was by the late 70s, he'd be dead.
People who consume 1 3/4 ounces of alcohol a day are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop head and neck cancers than non-drinkers. So it's highly likely that alcohol would have been a factor in his death.
But with the lung cancer spreading through his body, Dr. Hunter discovers that George was embarking on a series of increasingly aggressive treatments in a desperate attempt to prolong his life.
Fans are still paying tribute to former Beatle George Harrison, who died in Los Angeles.
Dr. Michael Hunter is the chief medical examiner for one of America's biggest cities. Now he's investigating the circumstances surrounding the passing of former Beatle, George Harrison.
So far, I've discovered that George's lung cancer might not have been his primary cancer. 2 years earlier, he'd had a cancerous growth removed from his neck. Although he was given the all clear, patients who have had cancer in the neck are at a higher risk of developing lung cancer. Once diagnosed with a second cancer, survival rates plummet. And I can see that George was trying every treatment option available to him.
June 2001. Institute of Oncology Research, Switzerland. 5 months before his death, George Harrison is back in Switzerland. Besides the ongoing lung cancer therapy, he's also seeking treatment to limit the cancer that has now spread to his brain. cancer specialists use cobalt radiation therapy to attack the tumor.
Cobalt therapy uses gamma rays to shrink inoperable tumors. It's one of the most precise and advanced forms of radiation treatment available. As patients are awake for the procedure, they are fitted with a personally cast mask to limit movement and protect parts of the body which are not being targeted. It's unclear what effect the cobalt radiation treatment had, but I can see that approximately 4 months later, George was at yet another specialist cancer center having another cutting-edge treatment.
November 2001, Staten Island University Hospital, 3 weeks before his death. George Harrison arrives in New York for a last-chance experimental cancer therapy at the hospital's specialist oncology unit.
I can see he was being treated with fractionated stereotactic radiosurgery. It uses 3D imaging to focus beams of radiation directly at the tumor, avoiding as much healthy brain tissue as possible. The beam is also rotated around the body so it can attack the tumor from all directions.
But again, it seems attempts to shrink the cancer were in vain. Given just weeks to live, George Harrison starts saying his goodbyes.
At this point, he was probably coming to the fact that he was mortal. You know, maybe he sensed he didn't even have all that much time left.
It was just about 2 weeks before he died. And I went to see him and had about an hour or so chatting with him. We still had a good laugh. That's what we always did when we got together, was have a good laugh about something.
45 years after their first meeting on the bus to school, Paul McCartney once again sits beside him and says a tearful farewell. He then called the other surviving Beatle, drummer Ringo Starr, who offered to cancel his tour of Canada to be by his side. George told him not to, adding, "I'm at peace." George is adamant that he won't die in the hospital or under media scrutiny. He holds a secret meeting with friend and security consultant Gavin DeBecker, who willingly loans him his secure L.A. mansion for his last days on Earth.
When anyone's sick, they don't want to become a caricature of that illness. None of us want to be remembered as those last couple of months on Earth when we don't look like ourselves, sound like ourselves, or act like ourselves. It's not a surprise that he very much goes out of his way to keep this to himself and to the people that were closest to him.
George wanted to keep everything secret, so keeping his death secret, that's in character for him. It's like, don't put me on a pedestal. Don't do any of those things. Let me just go on.
Tuesday, November 27th, 2001. Gavin DeBecker's home, Beverly Hills.
I think that George's faith was everything around the last part of his life.
The cancer is in his lungs and his brain, and it's likely that it's now also spread to other organs. Cancer cells take up the space and nutrients that healthy organs would use. As a result, they stop working. As death nears, the body begins its natural process of slowing its function, and the dying person feels weak and sleeps a lot. Small doses of morphine can also be administered to help with the pain.
For the next 36 hours, George Harrison drifts in and out of consciousness. November 29th, 2001, Gavin DeBecker's house. Surrounded by his wife and son, with his two best friends from the Hare Krishna faith chanting quietly into their meditation beads, George Harrison dies at 1:30 p.m. on Thursday, November 29th, 2001.
It was a very peaceful death. It never occurred to me that his passing would be anything but a relief for him.
Within 9 hours of his death, George Harrison's ashes were being flown by private plane to India, where, according to Hindu practice, they were scattered in flowing water.
After years of living a rock and roll lifestyle, George's passing from cancer may not have come as a surprise to some, but I am still not satisfied that I've got the full story of his death. And I have found something else from George's hedonistic past that may hold a clue.
On November 29th, 2001, the world mourned the passing of beloved Beatle George Harrison from lung cancer at the age of 58. But expert forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has found evidence of another disease that could have played a role in George Harrison's passing.
I've discovered that during George's period of heavy drinking in the 1970s, he contracted hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is an infection of the liver, and in association with heavy alcohol consumption, can lead to accelerated scarring of the organ, liver failure, and even cancer.
You don't want to say somebody had a death wish, but there was a few years in there where, you probably could have made a case.
Caught early enough, usually all that is needed to manage the condition is a course of antiviral medication, rest, and a balanced diet. However, I can see that following his interest in Hare Krishna, George believed he could cure himself through meditation.
I wouldn't be surprised if he even thought it was a spiritual illness of some kind.
I think one of the things that you have to do when you become religious is to suspend skepticism, even if it's logical.
If illness came upon him, he would definitely try to heal himself spiritually.
It is a dangerous condition to ignore. I can see that eventually George took his health seriously enough to seek proper medical attention. But in terms of my investigation into the root cause of George's cancer, hepatitis has only been linked to the development of liver cancer, so I can discount it as being linked to his death.
But after the discovery of what could be George's primary cancer in the head and neck, Dr. Hunter needs to investigate another potential cause of this type of cancer.
Recent research indicates that a significant number of head and neck cancers are associated with the HPV virus. Human papillomavirus is a sexually transmitted infection and is transmitted to the mouth through oral sex. Over 20 million Americans have the virus, although only a small percentage of these will develop cancer. But the number of sexual partners is an important risk factor in the development of HPV head and neck cancer. And George Harrison's multiple partners are well documented.
He was being really blatant about a lot of this stuff. He tried to seduce Ringo Starr's first wife right in front of Patty, his first wife.
George was often described as being naughty. In his naughty period, quite a lot of the time, that was part of his thing with girlfriends or one-night stands or whatever he did.
George was known to have had countless affairs and hundreds of one-night stands. He was even rumored to have had an affair with Madonna.
Although HPV is a major cause of the type of cancer George had, I can find no record indicating that he had the disease. So on that basis alone, I'm going to discount it as being the cause.
After investigating all the available evidence, Dr. Hunter can now reveal what he believes could be the final piece of the puzzle of George Harrison's death from cancer at the age of just 58.
Looking at George's family, I can see that his brother died from cancer and his mother died from a brain tumor. Usually cancer is caused by random gene mutations in one or a few cells of the body. But in some cases, a different type of mutation called a germline mutation can be passed down through the family in the DNA. Although these mutations may not lead to cancer, the risk of developing the illness is higher than average. and lowers the resistance to cancer-causing toxins like those found in tobacco and alcohol. So it seems that George's lifestyle of drinking and smoking were the triggers for a disease that genetically he was always predisposed to.
The world lost a really wonderful musician.
When you're true to what you are and true to what you want to be, when you go, they're going to remember the good stuff.
He also affected many, many people with his beliefs. I mean, he was the first one to bring Eastern religion really into the consciousness of most Western people. Now everybody's doing yoga.
It was just George Harrison of the Beatles. And later, George Harrison of George Harrison. A lovely guy.
George Harrison was 58 when he died, which by today's standards is pretty young. But it seems George lived a tremendous life, fulfilling dreams and reaching levels of critical acclaim that most will never approach.
The purpose of life is to find out who am I, why am I here, and where am I going?
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.